Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Joe Cole. This is my podcast where I talk to millennials about their lives and how they are managing young adulthood. I'm currently sitting with past guest Charlie Doe. This is his third time on the podcast. I visited Quinnipiac, Hamden, Connecticut. I can't call it Quinnipiac anymore, can I?
No.
Because we have no affiliation with said school.
It is here.
It's around here. Charlie still lives here because where do you work?
I work at a marketing company in Brantford.
In Brantford? Make sure you get up close to that mic. I could turn you up though.
Yeah, turn me up.
It's 20 minutes away from here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he is came to visit for the weekend to interview some folks, and I figured why not check up with Charlie, see how he's doing. Right?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good.
Trying to figure this post-college real life thing out.
Is it everyone?
Yeah. So how's work been?
Work's good. Work's good. Been there. Just over a year and a half, I guess. I started interning in December before we graduated. So yeah, like 16 months there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, do the same. 9 to 5, man. 9 to 5 every day.
Has it gotten... I remember you said you were a little... You enjoyed it. Has it the routineness, monotonous? Did I ask you that on the phone?
I think so. No, I mean, it's the same. It's just you find other things to be your excitement. I mean, when you're in college, going to class was never the exciting part. Being in school was the exciting part, so...
So what are you trying to find that's exciting other than work? What do you do with your life other than work?
Hang with the boys.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, hang around. Enjoy the people who are around here. I mean, a bunch of our good friends are here. We saw a bunch last night. So, yeah, catch up with people. Do what you're doing. Visit. Mm-hmm. Going out to L.A. in a little bit. Going to see Ben.
Oh, you're going to L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, I got to go see Ben.
What are you going to do? Just visit him?
Yeah, just go see.
You have plans with things to do while you're down
Certainly
there?
Certainly not. I doubt that either he or I would have the foresight to have plans.
Mm.
But, yeah.
I'm going to go try to see some stand-up comedy while I'm there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know who's out there.
Quit. It's L.A., Charlie.
James Franco teaches classes out there.
Who?
James Franco, UCLA, doesn't he?
Yeah, he teaches classes. English and film. And I think he teaches at UCLA,
mm-hmm.
USC, and another one.
Really?
What is he doing? Trades.
And he survived the apocalypse. Or no, he didn't.
No, he didn't. He got his
Danny,
face eaten
Danny
by Danny
McBride.
That was such a great idea for the movie because not like it was the end of the world, that it was like the legit apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Like the religious. It was a fun.
That was a great movie.
It was a fun take.
They said that movie was good for their friendships. They got to get a lot of stress out that they have with each other.
Yeah, they said that they all said the worst things and was on their mind. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, this is the worst thing that people think of me. Maybe it isn't. That's not as bad as. It's like a therapy kind of.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that.
Maybe.
Maybe we're
get
doing it right
together.
Now. So are you spending, how's long distance girlfriend?
It's not that long. It's 40 minutes. That's not long distance.
How often do you see her?
Pretty often.
How do you be a person that can do that?
It's not that hard. It's 40 minutes away.
There's, no, I'm just saying.
I work 25 minutes away.
I'm saying have another person to be as much of a concern about as you.
Most humans have that ability, Joe.
You'd be surprised, Charlie.
No, she's good. She's good.
How do you do that, though?
You just do. And I never thought about it, really. It's not like it's a real big effort to be nice to another human. You're just nice. You just work. Yeah, I don't know. We see each other a good amount.
How do you get to a place where you know you're satisfied with them? How long does it take to the point where you're like, I think I could do this with this person?
I don't know. I think that depends on a person-to-person basis. I mean, we were friends first, so that, like, was taken care of. I mean, I knew who she was. I knew what she was like. So it wasn't like I had to grasp a big philosophical question of like, do her values align with mine? Because we'd gone out plenty of times. It was just like, do we find each other mutually attractive? That's a good question to ask.
You, her, you, maybe not as much, but she
exactly,
deals, there's a settler.
Exactly, yeah. Because we're settlers. Are we not your providers? Those are great commercials.
What commercial is that?
The Settlers, the what is it? It's the TV commercials where the kid always wants to go next door to the big screen TV, and he comes back, and the parents are in like the 1850s style. Because we're settlers. Mm. We settle for things.
Yeah. So wait, in the early foundation, are you ever thinking, can I see if I can find something wrong?
I know what her faults are, but it wasn't like a checklist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just worked. It was very, very simple, easygoing.
Do you know the comedian John Mulaney?
I do. I like John Mulaney. His show flopped.
His show did flop.
Because he's funny.
He is maybe the funniest person on the planet.
He was a great SNL writer for a long time.
Mm-hmm. He co-created Stefan.
And his show sucked.
I didn't actually ever watch it because I was upset.
You and the rest of the world didn't watch it.
Because I was upset that it was getting bad reviews.
It was getting awful reviews.
It was getting awful reviews and no one watched it.
Mm-hmm. It was bad Seinfeld.
Bad Seinfeld. That's what I heard.
Mm-hmm. It was bad.
But
his stand-up is great.
Oh my God, yeah. I was just watching his stand-up and he has
a
thing.
Salt and Pepper Diner.
Which one is that?
Where he puts in like 55 plays of the same Tom Jones What's New Pussycat song and he plays it back to back.
I don't think I've heard that one.
Yeah, it's just like one of those weird songs that has like a dip in the middle and he goes all in about how you never really know if the song's over. So he played it 50 times in a row.
Is that his first Netflix? I think so. I'm more familiar with...
It was called New in Town, I believe.
Yes. I'm more familiar with Comeback Kid, which was his most recent one.
You should watch it. It's good.
I think I watched it a while ago, but probably only once at a surface level.
He's very good.
Mm-hmm. But in his new one, he talks about how... what does he say? He says he never understood how anyone could kill anyone. And then when he broke up with someone, he was like, oh, I get it. Not that I would. Well, but anyone who's seen my penis and knows my parents should die.
Who was it? Who was it that said that you never know if you really love your significant other unless you've plotted and planned their murder?
Was it
Kevin Hart or Chappelle, maybe?
I don't know, but
they're
that's
saying
great.
That you only know you love her when you're like, man, you've thought about it, you've watched, you've thought about putting, you know, the Drano in her oatmeal, but the only reason that you know you can't do it is because, oh no, I think it's Patrice O'Neill, maybe.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, but he's just saying that the only reason you don't do it is because you know they'll catch you now that you watch CSI.
I didn't know you were such a stand-up person.
Yeah, man. Late Night with Joe Cole, dude. We were both there.
Don't bring me that. Don't take me there mentally and emotionally.
You, me and John Mulaney have something great in common. It's great minds.
We both
shows
love
flopped.
All three. Oh, God. Yeah, well.
The last reference to something totally flopping. Did you watch SNL 40? Now this is an outdated reference.
The 40th anniversary? Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah, when Andy Samberg and Sandler are doing the breaks.
That's when you break?
Yeah, and then Samberg references that they made the movie that bombed. They made Dad, or That's My Boy or whatever.
Yeah.
He's been, why would you bring that up?
Yeah. I saw that movie. It was all right. It was funny. It was prototypical Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, what I was saying is, he did that thing about like intimacy, like getting close to a person. Are you ever afraid of like sharing that much and them knowing all that and what they'll do with it?
I'm not afraid of her. I think she's very sweet. She's not a scary human.
The guy
no,
issues.
But I get you. I mean, yeah, but it's the same. I think it's the same in a relationship as it is in a friendship. I mean, you tell your friends certain things and you don't tell your friends other things.
Mm.
And that's all vulnerability. So that, yeah, I mean, it's just, I consider it just a very close friendship, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tell all of my very good friends different parts of things because everyone's got that different, you know, you go to some people for advice, you go to some people for like a reality check, you go to some people for like stress relief.
Yeah.
It's all, yeah. So it all evens out.
Mark Maron talks about that. He talks about how he has intimacy issues. And I align with his mental makeup, emotional makeup.
I've heard he's important.
He's got probably one of the more popular podcasts. Really? He interviewed the president.
That's cool. Isn't he also a comedian?
He is a stand-up comedian. He
was he in Her?
He was not in Her.
That guy looks like him, though.
He came up with like Louis and that's in cool. Boston. Well, he started in L.A. and got strung out on drugs because of Sam Kinison's influence, and then started hearing voices, and then he went to Boston and continued doing drugs. He eventually got sober, but He's had like two wives, but he said he's got intimacy issues, and that he always, whenever he gets close to a person, he always just is waiting for them to use that against them. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have that. Yeah. I do maybe a little bit, but I think it's more.
Does a little bit.
I think it's more of maybe not being totally okay with like the things that I don't like about myself the most. So why That's would normal. I want to share those with someone else?
Yeah, that's normal. But it's also not like it's a two-way mirror. I mean, there's things that people don't know about everyone. Keep those.
Yeah, how do you balance that line of like what to share and what not to share?
You just never really thought about it, just sort of.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I think too much. Maybe
be okay. You're in your own head, dude. Just calm down.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
You know what else is upsetting? This election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not great.
I just look at it. First, people our age wanting to get into politics, the way this is going is not very reassuring.
But do you think that that's also just because you're probably paying more attention than you ever have before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But has it ever been bad this year? This bad?
Probably. I mean, we just started paying attention. I mean, before it was like, oh, Obama and McCain are funny on SNL, so they're probably fine. But both of them had very significant...
What was that thing you were talking about with Tim? About McCain and Obama and Trump? And...
Oh. Tim Malik,
our past guest. Malik? Tim Malik.
Tim.
Past
found
guest
something
on the
that
pod,
said
episode
that,
9, I think.
That people were criticizing during the Obama-McCain election, criticizing Obama, or not criticizing it, rather McCain said that Obama was a celebrity and McCain was a politician. And
right.
then the argument is that the same people who voted McCain were Republican, it's flip-flopped, whereas Trump is a celebrity and you know Bernie Sanders is a politician, but it just... Swap. So it's just, you know, it's the same arguments people always have.
Because Trump is a...
Yeah, it was just saying that in the past, McCain argued against the Republicans argued against the Democrats, that their mm-hmm. candidate was a politician, whereas the Democrats was a celebrity. And now mm-hmm. the roles are reversed. It's interesting that the same people who voted with that mentality would arguably swap. But I also don't think that people are voting based on celebrity or politician status. They vote based on the issues that matter to them.
Or just emotional
but no, I don't
gut
think,
feeling.
I don't think that I this think people... is any worse than any other time. I think that the evolution of the fact that young voters are paying attention and we haven't really paid attention before, matched with an ever-increasing amount of media coverage, makes it seem like, oh, wow, there's nobody here who's good. Realistically,
there's never you don't anyone get, who's good.
Either that or, I mean, nobody knows. You can't know how good someone will be as president until they are president. Mm. And even then, we see a lot of presidents who didn't have fantastic first terms get reelected or didn't continue the same success they had in their first term during their second. It's,
yeah, well,
their hands are tied often.
I've heard Chris Rock, it's because they want to get reelected.
Yeah, and the Senate's more powerful. I mean, when you think about
people
it.
Don't
well,
really
it's
do
what Bill Burr says. I mean, he... says the population problem is an issue, but you can't go up there and say that 90% of the population is going to get deported to Mars because you wouldn't get the votes. You got to get the votes first, and then you do what's important after. But no, I don't think any of them are inherently dangerous or negative. I think it's impossible to get to a dangerous or negative point.
Ted Cruz is dangerous?
To what I like, sure, but I don't think that we're going to end up in like a 1984, you know, Hunger Games setup if he's there. I think he'll be generally forgettable. I mean, if people asked you to name the worst presidents ever, more people are going to name like the bottom 10 to 20th percentile because the really bad ones, no one remembers. No one knows what Zachary Tyler did at all. At all.
Yeah.
And I might be confusing him with Zachary Taylor because there's a Taylor and a Tyler, and I think they're both Zachs, but I'm not sure. But that is clearly...
a reason.
Yeah,
reason,
exactly. Yeah. No one knows what Martin Van Buren did at all. He could have been awful, but the fact that there have been forgettable presidents. We've had presidents die and just other people have come in and like seemingly been all right.
Yeah.
I mean, who was it that was in office for like 50 days and then he died? Was it not Fillmore, not Grover Cleveland. He was elected twice, not consecutively.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not Coolidge.
I'm not sure, actually.
He was good. Yeah, someone was in for like 50 days and then his VP
then,
took over.
Then chilled and then peaced.
It was fine, yeah. I mean, think about how much flack Biden got when he started, and he was people were clamoring for him to run this year.
Mm-hmm.
And when Obama picked him, everyone was saying he picked crazy Uncle Joe,
white guy.
Yeah, who
opposite
just
of him.
Yeah, who just didn't really know anything. And but this year he would have been
the top
a savior. Yeah, an absolute savior. I mean,
Can you imagine if he...
Democrats liked him a lot. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of just what people are paying attention to. I think everyone's got a legitimate argument.
Do you want to eat that sandwich? Do you care?
No, we'll wait on it.
Okay. It's
good sango.
Yeah, you said you don't find any of the candidates inherently evil.
No.
What do you think is... Because I've come to realize that there is an actual intellectual... I don't know if it's of a high degree, but there is a intellectual... Or there's intellectual reasoning behind wanting Trump to be president. What do you think is... Well, like, I've heard people are just upset with the way things have been going on. They're just tired of what politicians are.
Yeah.
And they have a distrust of what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see any of the things in which... Some of the things that maybe people would criticize him on criticize him for as that big of an issue. I mean, I'm wondering, like, why you think he could be a good president.
Because I think if you're smart enough...
And why you think people think he could.
If you're smart enough to be one of the last four people there... You're smart enough to be average. I think that's it. And I think that if you're smart enough to get to that point, then you know how to put the right people around you. You know how to work the system. And realistically, the president, in my opinion, doesn't make a whole lot of the calls that change the landscape. They're important. They're a face. But I mean, the big controversy right now is the transgender bathroom issue, which was started by a governor in
North Carolina.
It's not the president putting in, you know, this or that. It's
Trump
it's
said a, that he thinks transgender people should be able to use any bathroom that they want.
Yeah, and what he thinks realistically isn't necessarily what's going to go through his law. That's why checks and balances exist. I mean, I'm sure, and it's the same thing we see with Obamacare. Is Obama's healthcare vision isn't the thing that he was able to sign in, which people don't like. He realistically doesn't love what he put out either. It's just that it gets pared down because it has to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, their ideas are one thing. What they might put down, if, you know, you had to write out their political viewpoint in a dissertation, is going to be very different from how they act. So yeah, I think it'd be fine. I think, in my opinion, his weaknesses might just be that I don't think that somebody who's got the ego sense that he has no equals has a risk for foreign policy, in terms of if he says one off thing to somebody who's unstable, that can cause a reaction. But that's not to say that anyone also can't do that. I mean, Obama's a very relaxed, calm, cool, and collected person. But if we're going to take it to one comment over 4 years, I would assume anyone could. And it's not like you have to make a comment either. I mean, it's, to me, that's his sort of main knock, is that he's very inflated and things like that. But he also is incredibly successful for a long time. He knows how to cut deals. He knows how to put great people, great advisors around him. That's why his businesses work well.
Some of them.
Yeah, but you're in business, you're bound to fail. I wouldn't judge based on your business failures. I mean, he's a multi-millionaire billionaire. He said
started with $1 million.
But I mean, people who run for president started with a trust fund to get them to Harvard too.
I just think that they're going to
everywhere.
Washington's going to insulate him, because the Republicans don't like him, there. Democrats don't like him. Is he going to be able to get anything done? Really?
I would argue that probably any of the candidates left won't really get anything done. I think we're just in a waiting period, which I think is fine. I don't think anything will go wrong. I think it'll be 4 years and it'll be done. It'll be easy. It'll just be moving forward. But yeah, I don't see any of these candidates going crazy. I don't think if Bernie got elected that we'd all have a free college system by the time he was out. I think he would talk about it. I think he would sort of just keep a steady pace and move forward. I think the same is true for Cruz. I think it's for Trump, for Hillary. It's going to be, I think the only real headline that will come out, depending on who wins, is either that the first real anti-politician wins, if it's Trump or Bernie, or the first woman wins, if it's Hillary. I think that that's the headline you're going to get, and that's what the memory is going to be. I don't think that anything they do during their tenure that they physically do is going to be what defined their presidency. I think if Hillary wins, it's going to be the first woman, the first previous first lady, maybe, you know, a powerful political Clinton empire. That's what's going to be defining the presidency. I think that if it's Trump, it's going to, or Bernie, they're similar in the sense that they're a little bit anti. Bernie's obviously very, you know, politically background, whereas Trump isn't, but they're both, you know, against the grain.
Yeah, they're both kind of like appearing to the same type of person, but mm-hmm.
Well, Trump's appealing
in a different way
to Sanders supporters now because he thinks Bernie's pretty much done. So he's saying, you know, come over.
Or he's trying to.
Yeah. He's making efforts to. So I think that that's what's going to be, and I think that that's kind of what Obama faced for a long time. Is
when I say appearing to the same person, I mean people are just upset with the status quo.
Right. Exactly.
But it's
a different way, in a different manner. I think that that's what Obama faced was that was he just the first black president or did he do something? And I think that to a point he's got he made strides in social equality. You could argue, or
I mean, he did. He helped the economy. He helped unemployment.
He made efforts towards. Sexual equality, and then he made efforts toward healthcare, which were the big things. Mm-hmm. So he'll either be remembered as really not good, if he didn't fulfill the promises he said, or he's going to be the first black president. But I think that that's kind of what you'll see in 20 or 30 years. I mean, mm-hmm. As far as their legacies go, I don't really think that anything that they directly do is going to be memorable. If something happens during their regime, I'm sure that all the dissenters on both sides will blame who was elected, but I don't think that any tragedies are going to be directly related to who's president. Mm-hmm. I think we're just as likely to get into a international conflict with Trump at the helm, with Clinton at the helm, with Bernie at the helm, with Cruz at the helm, it's all.
You don't think Trump is like a fire poker?
No, because I think that the same concepts apply. I think that once it happens, it'll be easy to point to say, oh, this is why. But realistically, I don't think that terror cells are going to wait and see who's elected before they would put something into place. I mean, it's not like the leader is the one who's going to be doing those anti-terror efforts. It's the enormous military that is there. So if you're already not... discouraged by doing that action by the world's largest military, then whoever is signing bills is probably irrelevant to you. I think that if, God forbid, a tragedy happened with Hillary as president, it'll be very easily to say that, oh, well, when you have a woman out as your face, it appears weaker than a man, which I disagree with. But mm-hmm. I think that'll happen. I think if it's Trump, it's very easy for liberals to say, oh, well, when you have a big
blowhard
pig. Yeah, it's really easy to piss people off. But I think that that's all just kind of be a little bit of a defense mechanism. I don't think that any of these people will get reelected. I sort of just kind of think they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that they're bad politicians. Bernie Sanders has been in politics for a very long time. Hillary's been in politics a long time. You don't become a senator by just being around. I mean, Cruz is a good politician. And you don't get the amount of...
He knows a lot about the Constitution.
You don't get a lot of the... There's a reason that Trump appeals to a lot of people, and it's not based on propaganda. He's very smart. I mean, he
knows
intentionally
how to tap into the emotional...
He intentionally created the persona that he is, and we've watched him taper it back, and he's a genius. He's a social genius.
So that... Yeah, but that's the thing. I don't think he's as big of a genius as everyone thinks he is, because... This is my... Just hear me out.
Yeah.
Is because... I think most people realize that he's putting on a persona that he might not fully, truly believe in. He's just creating some type of character to tap into the emotions of people, who are upset with the way things are going on. People, anyone who's just been a bully in life, like what I'm saying,
because they
see him as the guy. They see him as the guy with the Letterman jacket who's just like got all the answers. You know what I'm saying?
I would disagree. I think that you're right in the sense that he's...
But where does he actually stand? Because like that's the thing. Because does he actually believe what he's saying? Does he actually think that... Does he actually think that he's going to be able to kick all the immigrants out of the country? Does he actually think that we should have nuclear bombs in Europe?
That's the thing is that I think that he's a genius in the fact that he knew how to... get supporters. He knew where the supporters lied. He knew how to, fund, run, manage campaigns, debates, headlines. He's smart enough to know that headlines are going to manage popularity, and he worked them to his favor. And to that, I mean, all you can do is absolutely applaud his efforts. That's why he's here. He's very relevant. But also, he's not running for president because he's bored. He's not running for president because he needs more fame or popularity.
He wants to be the president.
I very legitimately believe
he wants to help the country.
That he's the best candidate. And I think that he has a legitimate argument for that standpoint, because if he wasn't legitimate, he would have been stomped on. We've seen people, you know, talk about running for president all the time. And he's also been brought up in past years before. Because he said that, you know, America should and can be run like a business. And he's not the only one to share that sentiment. I think Mark Cuban said that too.
He said that he thinks a businessman can run the country, but he doesn't know if Donald Trump is the one to be able to do it.
And it would be difficult until he gets there. But I don't think necessarily that Trump doesn't know where he stands. I think that he clearly has.
I think he knows where he stands.
And I think that he's clear with it. I think that he's not sympathetic to immigrants. I think he believes that deals can be made, but that at a certain point deals aren't made. And that's when you take a stand. I think he's a very hard, decisive, divisive person. But I don't think that he intentionally blurs the lines of where he stands in the way that that Clinton might, where, you know, Clinton says a couple things, but her voting records from the past indicate that she's flopped at whatever is favorable.
Yeah, what's your biggest issue with Clinton?
With Hillary? I personally just don't think she's honest. I would rather have an honest politician whose views I disagreed with than someone who says that their views are what mine are, but it's unsure or untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's no such thing as an honest politician, because in any position of power you have to, or you don't have to, but it's traditional to blur or withhold information to protect the greater good of your constituents. But I think Trump is one of, if not more, one of, if not the most, I think, clear in what he thinks is an issue, what he thinks is a non-issue. I don't really think he cares a lot about social progression, but I also don't think that he has like a hard vendetta like Cruz to stop it. I think he's like, yeah, that's irrelevant to me. Let me focus on these things. Mm. And I think in a Trump presidency, we would see a huge focus on the economy. I think that's what he thinks I can fix. I'm good at this. And I think that he also thinks, where everyone, myself included, would criticize his foreign policy because he's never been a politician, I think he thinks, yeah, I've never been a politician, but I've been a great businessman, and working with other businesses around the world is almost similar to working with politicians around the world. You have to see each other's needs, wants, desires, surpluses, and then work something out. The idea of him and Putin together in a room isn't like, oh yeah, that'll probably go great, but at the same time, he's probably worked with people who have despised him, and he's made things work.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But going back to your Hillary question, I just don't like people who I couldn't pinpoint what she thinks about an issue.
She'll say anything she wants to, or anything necessary to get elected.
Yeah, yeah, and she'll probably win. I would say she's probably the front runner to win.
But so you said a lot of good things about Trump. Like, what would scare you most about a Trump presidency?
I think a humble president is vital. I think you have to be able to step back and not assume that you're always right. I think that that's true with all senses of power, is that you have to be confident in yourself, but you also can't consider yourself the first and last say on measures. And I don't know how Trump works in business, but his persona is that he's first. He's always the guy at the front of the boardroom making all the decisions. I also think that he thinks he's absolutely immune to things. I mean, it's funny, and I think that it was intentional to get headlines out of debates while he figured out how to work them, was to mock Cruz or to mock Fiorina or to mock the analysts and the people asking him questions. But when that becomes ambassadors and other leaders, and he's, you know, if he's calling the leader of the European Union, you know, lying, whatever it is, or if he's calling him, you know, the way he referred to Rubio and Cruz as
Little Marco and Lion Ted,
that's fine because he's trying to beat them. But if you turn that into foreign policy, and then suddenly we have no allies, that's a huge if. That's a huge saying, oh, he's probably not smart enough to know you can't insult the leaders of other countries. But based on, you know, how he acts with other people, it does raise that question. Also, I think a huge thing is just an outsider persona. I mean, we've heard the Canadian government, we've heard people in
the UK.
Yeah, we've heard them, their leaders say him being elected would affect the relationship. Didn't they have a petition in the United Kingdom to not let him come visit the country if he's elected?
I think I may have heard that.
So I think that's an issue. I mean, even if he's great here, if the world doesn't trust your leadership, then he could be great in the boardroom, but if he's never there, that doesn't matter. But I definitely don't think that he's like a dictator waiting to get the Iron Throne that he can then...
Do you know the concerned people have been expressing about like the First Amendment freedom?
Yeah,
of speech?
He wants to say that you can't write anything bad about him. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Can't do that. But I also don't think that he could ever do that. I think he says it.
Yeah, well, there's people who criticize him and you hear him, his response is like...
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, doesn't he say like he shouldn't say that, like wait till he sees what happens or something?
I mean, we'll see. But to the same point of saying that Trump is an abrasive, brash person, the way he talks about Sanders is also not abrasive or brash. He actually seems to respect him a lot, probably because he doesn't see him as a threat. But if you hear the way he talked about Rubio Cruz and to a point Clinton, he doesn't talk about Sanders that way. He says, you know, I hear a lot about that guy. Seems like he's winning all the time. I don't really get the political system where he's winning, but he's not winning. And he seems to value, probably because he sees a lot of value in speaking about Sanders positively, because that's a lot of votes that aren't going to go towards him that are seemingly up in the air. But he does clearly have the ability to also speak positively about competition. And I really don't think that you can become as successful as he is in business without humility. I think it's a persona, but I do think that he has that capacity. Mark Cuban seems like he's an immature little boy when he's running around on the court for the Mavericks yelling at refs, but he also knows how to work systems in his favor. He knows that if he's like that to the refs, that he's hurting his team because he's getting three or four less calls.
Did you hear that he said that Russell Westbrook wasn't a superstar?
Yeah, he did.
Silly man. Anyway, yeah, I understand that.
But politics are fun. They're fun to argue.
Yeah, so I heard you say something yesterday, when you look for a candidate, you have four main things that are important to you. And the first was just general competency. Mm-hmm. And then you think, I think you said foreign policy, and then you said education and what other?
Yeah, I mean, I would never want to be a single issue voter. I respect the people who are because it's important to them. But yeah, general competency is first. I mean,
I say that. Whoever seems the least sociopathic.
Yeah, if I was going to go back, I'm very, very moderate. I'm socially very liberal, but I'm generally very moderate. If I was going to go back, obviously, and if I was allowed to vote in the previous elections, I probably would have gone with, I mean, from the first couple of times I paid attention, I probably would have voted for McCain first, because how I understood the country at the time, to probably my lack of education, would just be that the country was in a bit of a dysfunctional state, and he seemed to be one who was going to stabilize. So I liked Obama as president, but I would have liked him afterwards. I think Obama's sort of 360 degree change was so aggressive for a time when it wasn't really stable, which is why I think he only accomplished, you know, half or arguably less than he wanted to. So I think if McCain went first and then Obama's two terms followed after, would have been more effective. So I probably would have voted McCain first, and then I would have wanted Obama for two terms, because I think his programs were two-term length. I don't think he would have been a good one-term president. I think that he was a two-term president. I liked Romney. I would have voted Obama.
The whole
anyway,
Mormon thing just kind of.
But I liked Romney.
It was like a cancellation thing for me.
If Romney ran this year against the
not gonna acknowledge that
current, I missed that.
I said the whole Mormon thing is like a disqualifier for me.
That's irrelevant to me.
How is it irrelevant that they believe that?
That's, I don't care.
Okay, go ahead.
If Romney ran this year, I probably would have voted for him.
No disrespect to Mormons. I just don't get it.
The Book of Mormon. If Romney ran this year, I probably would have voted for him. If Paul Ryan ran this year, I probably would have voted for him over the Democratic candidates, without a doubt. If Biden ran against who was running, I probably would have leaned towards Biden. But I think it depends. If they ran against each other, I obviously would have looked much more into it. So I really would go back and forth party-wise.
So what do you not like about
the things? You're saying the things I cared about. I definitely care about general competence first. I'm a big social liberal, so I really like people who empower social progression. I definitely don't need somebody who's going to put in hard and fast laws that, you know, almost like, you know, if you are homosexual, transsexual, transgender, poor, whatever, these are the benefits that you now get. I don't need that, but I'm a big fan of equality. I think that and I'm fine with it not being in politics, really. I don't know if that's, you know, necessarily what I...
What do you mean?
Like, I don't think that I would, just because a candidate says, oh, I'm going to legalize fully in every state homosexual marriage. That's attractive to me. I like that. I'm a big sexual equality, gender equality, everything equality person, but I'm not necessarily going to say, oh, that person. Whereas I'm more likely to say, oh, okay, Ted Cruz wants nothing to do with that whatsoever and is going to actually put in efforts to stop the natural social progression that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in that. So it's more of a not vote rather than a yes vote.
He's a Constitution guy, and in the Constitution, there's nothing says anything about marriage. And there's a thing that says if it doesn't mention it, it's up to the state. So he thinks that instead of having five people in the Supreme Court decide the fate of the entire country, mm-hmm. that people should win an issue by going to the ballot box and fighting.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm more likely not to vote for somebody who's going to put in places to stop what I care about rather than I am to vote for somebody whose sole purpose is going to be, oh, let me... Like, I think it's important. I really, really do. I think that every person, regardless of their identity, should be able to be happy, pursue happiness. I think that's what the country was founding on. We say, you know, the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. So I think it's strange now to go back and try to limit that based on views. But I absolutely respect religious teachings, constitutional teachings that lead people to believe the opposite. I think I'm entitled to mine just the same way that everyone else is entitled to theirs. I don't need to go around preaching to everybody, oh no, I'm right, you're wrong, which is kind of the same way I vote, is that I don't need somebody who's going to go and drastically decide for everyone what they think the right viewpoint should be, which is why I'm not going to vote for somebody who's going to decide for me that my viewpoint is wrong. Mm-hmm. I would rather let society naturally progress in a way that it has throughout all of history. I mean, other than just voting, voting rights for women and women and minorities.
What do you mean voting rights?
Like the amendments to the Constitution, giving voting rights, giving suffrage to women and minorities. The social progression that we've seen hasn't come through presidential movements, really. Mm. I mean, naturally, schools, as desegregation started to happen, naturally schools were more open. Naturally, people began to become more accepting of other religions, other races, other gender equality issues. I mean, through even the last 15 years, through our millennial lifetime, we've seen an enormous increase in acceptance and large scale, really, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like large scale coming out.
Tolerance.
Tolerance, yeah, of homosexuals. I mean, Michael Sam never would have happened in previous years. Mm-hmm. And he sucked at football. But that sort of large scale...
He's just too small. He's good, though.
That sort of large scale...
Met him.
Tolerance, I think, is just natural. It's not because he was a football player. It's simply because people are more, in general, tolerant. Even people who are opposed to homosexual marriage are still more tolerant. I actually feel like, I mean, most of my very good friends are conservative. And I think that you hear when we go back and forth and in good, intellectual, respectful debates, the first thing they say is, I respect everyone else's rights. I just don't think it should be that way. And I think that that itself is so much more tolerant than people give it credit for. I think that when people criticize conservatives, they say, oh no, like you hate the gays, you hate, the trannies, you hate all these things. They say these
trannies. Is not,
you say
an acceptable word, Charlie.
No, but that's what you say when you're criticizing. Right, right. That's what people say. Oh no, this is who you are. I mean, but realistically, when you listen to people who dissent from those views, when you listen to how they usually voice their disagreement, it starts with no. You can do whatever you want. I just don't think that's right, or I just don't think that.
So,
that's
what do you think about
goes.
People who just like don't serve birthday or don't serve wedding cakes to gay people? What that whole deal? Did you remember hearing about that?
No,
there was like a, they.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's everyone too. I mean, that Kim Davis does not like homosexual people, and she goes out of her way to make it more difficult for that to happen. But I think on an ideological level, we're seeing a much a healthy progression towards that sort of development, which is why I really just don't think that, you know, the president's going to make a huge difference.
There was a bakery owned by people who didn't believe in gay marriage, mm-hmm. who wouldn't sell a cake.
And I mean that, but those sort of things have happened to a lot of people. It's not just homosexuals that have been targeted that
way. What do you think that?
Oh, I think that that's wrong. I think that's stupid. I think that it hurts your business. It's not necessary. But I legitimately, for as strongly as I believe in my viewpoints and my very socially liberal viewpoints, I do respect and understand people who don't believe that way, because I believe that way because that's how I think humanity should work. I think humanity should be based on acceptance, tolerance, love. But I also fully understand how people who don't agree with it say, religiously, that isn't how this should happen. Mm-hmm. I think those are both as realistically infallible arguments as you can have. Who's to say that what I think is more right than what you or anyone else was taught? It's the exact
right.
same.
There's no right way to anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's the exact beliefs. Same thing. So it's very easy for liberal people to say, you know, that is stupid, that's short-sighted, that doesn't matter. But how and why? Like, why wouldn't that matter? If that's a huge cornerstone for your upbringing, that absolutely matters. You probably make 99% of your decisions based on your upbringing and 1% based on your personal viewpoint and experiences. So you can't just totally discount someone's upbringing because you think that that's intolerant or silly. I mean, it's just how things go. That's why I'm not a big fan of when people say in every single political debate, which I'm usually in the minority as far as my views, I think, until as long as someone has a legitimate argument, reason, criticism that's based on either facts or, you know, clear evidence as to why this thing is a thing, then that isn't a stupid argument to me. I can disagree with it, but it's not a useless, stupid argument. A stupid argument to me is Bernie Sanders' politics won't work. Works. He's been fine. He's done things in our country. Those systems work in other countries. So it won't work is a stupid argument. If you say, here's why I don't think it will work for us in a large scale, and you point to things, great. Your argument makes a ton of sense. Now I'm on board. And I think that's the same way for gender equality, for sexual equality is.
So you don't like just the general deflection without like a deeper.
If you've put the time in to create a disagreement, I will absolutely listen to it and generally think it's valid. I might disagree with how you're interpreting the data, but if the data is there, then we can have a legitimate conversation about it. Mm-hmm. For reals, though. What's your thoughts on all those things?
I don't know.
You don't know? You seem like you know. You seem like you're very intrigued by the system.
I mean, I'm just trying to learn.
Yeah, I think everyone is. I think that's our generation, is getting to the point where we can make our own value judgments on.
I mean, I agree with everything you said. I just don't like when people, I don't like when people get stuck in their own echo chambers and don't explore other ways of thinking, just because they like the way their thinking is.
Yeah, I mean, I love the way my thinking is, and I definitely, I would say comfortably, won't change that.
Don't challenge it though.
But I definitely would challenge it. I've definitely had my viewpoints rounded off. My corners of what I was have been rounded by being around very conservative people, which I love. I think that the most intelligent people are the ones who get a lot from both sides. Mm-hmm. It's why I think Trump's doing really well. I mean, Trump was arguably a you know, quote unquote Democrat for a long time. I think it's why he's doing well, is because he's got a good understanding of both sides of the system too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I was a person who grew up, my mom's a liberal, my dad's conservative, but I wasn't a person who some type of there wasn't a singular ideology that was kind of thrust upon me. Mm-hmm. I kind of just jumped, when I jumped into politics, I just kind of chose based on which seemed the most rational to me. Yeah. And
those changed as you get older too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, youth.
There's some quote, if you're a liberal, if you're not a liberal when you're young, it means you don't care enough about people. If you're not conservative when you're old, it means you don't have enough experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they say too, you're a liberal until you have to support your family, and then suddenly everyone else isn't as important to you when you have to focus on yourself. And that's legit.
I mean,
the way I vote when I'm 20 will absolutely be inevitably different from when I'm 60. Things will matter to me differently. I mean, it's.
But then there's people like too, one of my grandmas who just stays liberal up until the end. I mean, there's people like that too.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, you think about the decisions I make now when I talk about politics, or the ones that are important to me. I'm basically not tied down by anything, 23-year-old with a moderately paying job. I have no responsibilities. If I got up and moved to Italy tomorrow, it wouldn't really affect anyone. So why wouldn't I care about
it? Affect me emotionally.
Why wouldn't I care about everybody? I have nothing. All I have to do is pay my rent every month. That's it. I am responsible for that small fraction of money, and everything else is up to my discretion. Mm-hmm. When I'm 60, 50, and I have a kid in college, and I have a family, and I have to make sure that family is okay, and I'm taking care of my parents, and I have to make sure they're okay, I'm certainly going to say, yeah, that extra money that I wouldn't have because of a large-scale government program that helps other people, ideologically, sure, I'd love to help them, but I can't right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to focus on what matters to me now. I think that's natural.
The question of plenty of sense. I understand that. Mm-hmm. The concept of influence is interesting to me because I was just thinking about that, why I think the way I think, and I've talked about that before, and I think I may be a little more left-leaning just because I enjoy show business, and most people who are in show business are liberal.
Yeah.
So they undoubtedly will influence me, but I just don't understand. You say socially, I mean, I would love to talk to you about what the whole education thing is, but like socially on an economic from an economic standpoint, I just don't understand why people just can't pay a little more so people who have nothing have a better shot.
Yeah.
I think this idea that people can, that everyone is on an equal level playing field where people can just pull themselves on their, up by their bootstraps and if they work hard, they will have just as much opportunity to succeed. No.
Yeah.
There's people who are in environments and situations where it's much harder to get out of them.
Yeah. I would agree with you. And
but then I also understand people who are like, I'm not going to support someone who's just lazy and who just needs welfare.
Right. Because doesn't have any drive. There's no screening for it. I mean, mm-hmm. I personally absolutely agree with you that the world isn't an equal playing field at
all. Why can't there be some type of new deal situation where
it keeps getting worse.
We're an advanced country.
It used to be that a college education was a benefit. Now it's a requirement to move forward. And now a bachelor's isn't enough to separate you. It's enough to put you in the pool, and you need a master's to get out of the pool. I mean, we just keep seeing it getting more and more inaccessible to do that. But to the same point, I totally understand our conservative friends who say, yeah, I'm sorry that happened to you, but why is it now my responsibility because it didn't happen to me? You know, why do I, if I've done, like, who's to say that I also didn't face challenges mm-hmm. because, you know, my parents were in a good place. You know, another time, my parents didn't grow up with a whole lot at all, and they worked really, really hard to the point where now, from an outside perspective, I grew up with an incredible support system. Mm-hmm. So seemingly it's like, okay, we had these people who worked really hard and now also have to give back when no one gave back in the first place.
Right.
I understand that without a doubt. And exactly what you said too, you can't screen the difference between somebody who has an unbelievable desire and thirst to learn and work and succeed, mm-hmm. but is in a low income area that they can't escape, and somebody who doesn't care. They just don't give two shits about anything. And they're like, oh wow, someone else will work for me. Great. I'll keep minimally achieving. I think we see a lot of that being a hard thing to find. I mean, what, you can't take a test to mm-hmm. decide that, you can't do anything.
And I think a big reason as to why that stuff happens is because there's a distrust of what the government will do with. See, because I was listening to an interview with Mark Maron. He was talking about this. I think it was on Opie and Anthony. He was like, I don't understand why we can't just do some type of New Deal type of thing where people pay a little bit more. We the infrastructure around the country gets fixed, and we make it a little easier for people who have a hard time. And then someone was like, well, I don't trust the government with our money. And he's like, yeah, well, like, that's the issue. Like, why can't we have a government that we have a trust in to do something mm-hmm. with? We can't trust politicians.
Yeah, but I mean, but that'll lead to an inevitable political change, realistically. Once the system breaks, the masses aren't just going to sit there kind of confused. I mean, mm-hmm. we have a radical enough voting base that change is made when change requires being made.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably broken, but
mm-hmm.
but I mean, then you open up a whole can of worms with that. Is like, yes, is politics broken? Probably, but every political system is a little broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this one good enough? Like, when I look at it, you know, in a vacuum from far away, do I think that running a country based on a piece of paper that was written 250 years ago?
See, that's the thing.
With people who could never have conceptualized
had any idea
what a machine gun is, what a homosexual marriage would look like, mm-hmm. what you know, the NFL would be, like whether or not Tom Brady's footballs matter to people. Like, when I look at that and go, oh, well, this is what our country was based on, founded on, it's like, yeah, well, maybe not though. But then I think, wow, it's also incredibly, one, impressive that this piece of paper lasted and shaped something for so long. And two, maybe it's not the worst thing to have 10 ground rules. Like, will those ground rules be confusing sometimes? Absolutely. Will they cause problems when they shouldn't? Probably. But they are there. Like, it's better to have them there than not have them there. So mm-hmm. in a point, I say, yeah, arguing the Constitution is stupid. Those guys had wooden teeth. Like, they didn't have so many of the things that we have. But do I really want to get rid of it? Because we've seen so many countries that haven't had that ground rule absolutely crumble. I mean, stronger empires, stronger governments. Like, it's just it's a catch-22. Eventually, you just kind of have to be, you have to check your idealism a little bit, because you do have to give up. What's his name? John Locke is a philosopher. He says you give up all your freedom for security and like the social contract. You just have to do that. It's never going to be perfect, but it's pretty good now. I mean, we're sitting here podcasting about it. The fact that we can talk about it is is impressive in its own right.
That was another thing to me is inherently, and I talked about this with Stav, and he kind of steered my mind in a better direction. But inherently to me, just the idea that conservatism is based on sticking to principles that have been in place for over 200 years and not wanting to evolve, where liberalism more, it seems more closed off, where liberal seems open to evolution. People are going to change, the environment that we live in is going to change, so why not adapt to them and being open to progressiveness? But who's to say that those principles in which they think we should be living by aren't correct? Mm-hmm. So like, but see, this, I'm a person who doesn't know. I'm trying to learn.
Yeah, I think we both are. But also, I mean, I think it's,
it just doesn't seem with anything, with any other thing in life, it doesn't seem realistic to me to stick to the original idea of something without being open to a different way of looking at it.
But also, though, I don't necessarily think conservatism. I think it's both. But I think that the idea maybe that isn't evolving with the times is a little bit misled. I don't think conservatives...
I mean, it definitely has evolved.
Yeah, no, but like, even in terms of like, if we looked at, you know, if you're doing a wonder of description, you say liberal, and I think this isn't you, this is everyone, say liberal, progressive, conservative, stay. But I don't think conservatives stay. I just think that they progress in a different manner. Like, because our generation is so socially focused that's what we define liberal and conservative as, is, oh, are you going to socially progress or not? But like, liberal progression is progressivism in a social standpoint. It's people pushing for rights in different ways, but also, you know, a little bit not. I don't think Clinton really cares about, for me, like, she doesn't really care about homosexual rights as much. She cares about
women.
They don't even love her, but you know what I mean. But when you look at, you know, oh, they want to stay the same and they want to evolve. Conservatives don't necessarily want to stay the same. They want to advance the country. They want to progress, but they want to do it with the same mindset. Mm-hmm. Progressives want to, or liberals want to shift the mindset. Conservatives, to me, want to shift the practice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, practice beats ideology in terms of success a lot. I mean, we've seen some of, there's a reason that, as a very liberal person, there's a reason that some of the most successful presidents have been conservative, because they do move the country forward. If conservatives always kept the same, they would have died out by now.
And the conservative party, the way the conservative makeup right now is too, so different than what Reagan, like, Reagan liked amnesty. Reagan raised taxes. I mean, that was after he fixed the economy, but then he increased deficits because he wanted to fund a war. Yeah. He wanted to make sure that we were safe. And that's the other thing. They talk about that. Colbert talked about this with Bill O'Reilly on his show about what's the difference between, like, conservatives get mad about wanting to spend more for the prosperity, the potential prosperity of everyone in our country, and to make sure that everyone has equal education. Conservatives don't like spending on that, but when it comes to protecting us from other people and military, yeah, they don't care.
It's
a rational thing.
Yeah, well, that's why it's just a good argument. I mean, it's just all very important things, and there's a finite amount of money and time you can focus on it. So I think that's the fact that politics in America argue and swap back and forth is why it's a great country. Because you can be disappointed for 8 to 12 to 16 years, but you can trust that it'll swing the other way eventually.
But it's getting scary now. Louis, in his email, said, back in the day when I was growing up, conservatives and Democrats and Republicans were friends who had disagreements. Now it doesn't seem that way.
Yeah, that's media a little bit, though. Yeah. Because when you think of it on a small scale,
yeah, that's true.
All of our friends are liberal and conservative that are friends that have disagreements. We don't my best friends, most of them are conservative. I would say almost all. Mm-hmm. And I'm the silly liberal that they make fun of, but in only in like a joking manner. I mean, I think we've all learned an incredible amount from being in an election year with smart, educated people with differing views.
Mm-hmm. Are you scared of getting older, Charlie?
No, I don't know. I'm probably scared. I don't know. I don't want to die, but I'm all right getting older, I guess.
Do you think about that?
Dying? Yeah, I think about dying. Everyone thinks about dying all the time.
I don't really think about it until someone talks about how they think about it, and then I start thinking
I don't
about
think
it.
That I'm like, I'm not waiting for, you know, a crane to fall through the window, like, oh, I'm probably going to die. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't think about like that. I'm, but yeah, one day I'm going to die.
When you think of the future, what's the thing you're most afraid of?
I don't know. I don't like being lonely. I'm not being a lonely guy. I like being around people. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be lonely.
You don't want to be insulated in your suburban life where you don't have any connections with people.
But I'll probably have friends. I have good friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're not scared of getting older?
No. I'll have friends. I have a good family, good friends. Mm-hmm. I'll have a job, I assume.
You'll have a job.
Yeah, there's no big threat facing me. There's no impending doom that I'm nervous about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to be healthy. I'd like to be happy. I'd like to be prosperous, and I'd like to have friends. But I'm not afraid of not having any of those things. I'm going to assume that they're fine until they go bad. Mm-hmm. And then we'll revisit this, and I'll sit sobbing in my one-bedroom apartment that it all went downhill.
Do you, when you think about the future, do you ever think about not necessarily your place in it, but the general future?
It's fine. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fine. I can't worry about the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we might not make it there. Why worry about it? We might not make it. We might go... Tonight, we might go get a beer, and that could be the end. I hope it's not, but, like, you never know. The fact that life is fragile, you can't worry about the future because there's no way you could know, no way you could know whatsoever what it would bring.
You can't worry about the future because you don't know what's going to bring.
Yeah, because you might not make it there. Things will go differently. You don't know what positive or negative surprise occurrence could happen. I mean, you could get a job offer tomorrow by, you know, name the production company that loves your podcast and needs you to come out. Now your future looks entirely different. Mm-hmm. You could experience a horrendous loss of something, and that changes your future. I mean, you could say, oh, I'm worried about finances because I don't know how to take care of my parents when I'm 70. But if that day comes.
So you're not a worrier sooner, much?
Not really. I'd like to think no. I mean, so I'm probably neurotic.
I'm
probably crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know me.
What do you mean you're probably neurotic? You got to know if you're neurotic or not.
No, if you're neurotic, you can't know.
I'm pretty sure I'm neurotic. I know pretty much.
I don't know. I don't think I worry about the future all that much.
Do you worry about anything? How do you stay happy?
Hope, I don't know. No, I'm sure I worry. I don't want to. I worry about, you know, what am I going to do to be successful? I'd like to be successful. I assume I'll get there, mm-hmm. but I'm not worried about it past, like, you know, a year. Like, do I worry about where I am in a year? Yeah. Like, do mm-hmm. I want to be on the right career path? Yeah. Like, do I want to be making enough money to be successful later? Yeah. But I'm not really that worried about not doing it because you'll always assume there's a chance out. I'm very privileged in that I could change if I wanted to.
It's so hard to not it's so hard to compartmentalize and not get ahead of yourself and do things based on what your future plan for what you should be is.
Yeah. You just adjust.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do I stay happy? I don't know. Guinness helps.
Guinness is fantastic,
mm-hmm,
isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Get a plug. We'll get a sponsorship.
I wish. I'm trying to get some sponsors on this thing.
Get a plug.
Guinness. It's not tar. I swear you could drink it. Guinness. That's a good ad campaign, right?
Done.
Well... Thanks, Charlie, for doing this.
Thank you, Joe.
We're good to talk. At an
microphones
hour.
Microphones in front of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've been talking all week.
Do you have any questions for me?
Was my couch comfy? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have any, you don't think, when you don't think about me at all, what, you don't worry about me?
No. No, I think you'd be fine.
Yeah.
Think you're doing it. Think you're doing what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Do you worry about you? You worry about you.
Of course I worry about me.
How's Ben?
Ben Cole?
Oh, B. Cole Broll.
He works at a...
He's a football coach, isn't he?
No, he doesn't do that. It's spring, Charlie.
But in general, doesn't he?
He helped out. He volunteered for the high school team.
That's nice.
He works as a security guard at a hospital. He's trying to be a cop. Works for a security guard at a hospital. Makes good money. Mm-hmm. He's had some interesting run-ins with like mental patients who have escaped mm-hmm. that he's had to chase.
Good.
How's your family?
They're good. They're living life. Mm-hmm. Rosie's up north, they're down south.
Oh yeah, they're
Charlotte.
Down south.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they went to, they're going to Nashville, I think, in a week.
What's there?
Vacation, I guess. I don't know. They traveled. They got an empty nest. What else are they going to do?
Are they, do they have, how do you, how's your relationship with your parents? How do you keep that up, good, being allowed, yeah, being far away?
It's the same as, I mean, I went to school 4 hours away, so it's mm-hmm. really the same. I mean,
when was the last time you saw them?
I saw them relatively recently. Easter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, went down for Easter.
Did you go down there?
Yep. It's so tweet, so tight.
Why?
It's just cool down there. It's warm and it's in a city and it's on a lake. It's cool stuff. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, no, good. Call them, hang out, text. They're very tech savvy, so it's very easy. Mm. Dad's always on the iPads, just FaceTime in. It's good times.
Oh, they're tech savvy?
Yeah, very tech
my
savvy.
My dad knows nothing.
Mama Doe is the tech specialist.
My
dad's at Davidson.
Oh, so really?
She's all.
My dad's thumbs are too big to do the touch thing.
Oh, yeah. They're all about, we get a family group text.
The touch sensor on the iPhone.
Yeah.
All right, Charlie. Let's
cool,
go
man.
Hang out.
Let's hang out.
Appreciate doing this.
You got it.
All right. Thank you to Charlie Doe for coming back on the podcast and checking in with us about where you're at in life. I know the majority of that conversation was about the presidential election, and I've said before that I don't really like talking about politics on this podcast, but I think that's where me and Charlie were at. Because there was a lot of stuff going on in the election, and I think Charlie and I are an example of a lot of 20-something-year-olds who are attempting to become engaged with politics for whatever reason. For me, out of fear because of what's going on in this current political situation, and I think we are honest in that we don't know much, but that we're just trying to learn. However, there's a lot of young people who, because of how upsetting this election has been, have been choosing not to be engaged or attempting to be engaged or knowing what's going on. But I feel like it affects us, and I feel like choosing not to engage, even though that may be the easier choice, isn't the right one because, you know, us young people are going to be around here for a lot longer and going to have to deal with a lot of the stuff that happens because of what's going on. Unless people move to Canada, which seems like a viable option right now. But anyway, that is all for today. I will leave you there with that. I'm going to LA in a few days to check out that mythical place and to interview some interesting people. So look out for that in next week's episode. But until then, have a good one.